Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
How many days are you gonna wait before you're tired and knocked down? How many days is it gonna take to decide to walk away now?
And welcome back to the 90 Day Fiancé Wrap Up Podcast. We're here today to talk about episode 2 of 90 Day Fiancé's Happily Ever After. Should be a fun one, potentially, and specifically because whilst there are cast members I'm not a fan of, I am a big fan of all the guests I'm going to have on this season. And today is no different. I'm, of course, your host and conductor of the Hot Mess Express, Quizzen Vakili, ready to break things down. And with me today, here's what happened. So we found out that this was going to be the episode where there's going to be toe sucking from Jasmine to Gino. And this person messaged me and said, please, oh, please, can I be on this episode? And I said, you know what? What am I if not a good friend? I got you. He is, of course, one half of the Married at First Sight Wrap Up and many other projects going on. If especially if you're talking Marvel, this is your guy. And if you're talking expert when it comes to Gino and Jasmine and the toe fetish, it's this person. It's Jason Reed. Jason, how you doing?
I mean, I can't be the only person that slowed down that foot footage. I mean, come on, let's not all pretend that we weren't into that. I don't know what you're saying here, Puya. Of course, I love that segment. But seriously though, wow. Yes, I'm here, Puya. Happy to be here as always. I made sure to get a nice nap before I came to the podcast so that you were not irritated with me. I didn't get enough sleep, so I'd be nice and excited and fresh for you here. I'm happy to be here breaking down another one with you.
Yeah, I could never a dull moment when you're here with me. I died when I saw that this was the episode that's coming. I was like, Jason really gets like weird episodes to come talk about. It's so hilarious to me.
It's kismet. I tell you, the weirdness is drawn to me, I think. That's what it is.
Yeah, no, honestly, though, it's incredible and seamless the way it happens. We have quite a bit to talk about here. We got one new couple added to the mix with the rest of the couples that we met last week or we saw again last week. But we're going to kick things off with a couple that we have talked about already, and that's Gino and Jasmine. So the reason why I opened up with that part is because obviously, as we learned last week, they are on their honeymoon. They're doing this Michigan camping life. The scene opens up with them roasting marshmallows on an open fire, and then they're going to go to sleep. So Gino just dumps them on the floor.
Yeah, just no concern for any wildlife, no concern for any like what that will attract to their campsite. He just doesn't know what to do with them, so he just dumps them on the ground. I'm like, okay, Gino, you're doing a great job here.
Yeah, he does not care. He's just ready to go to bed, whatever. It's not our home, not our problem. Although I feel like if left to his own devices, Gino would very much treat his house the same way. So,
I mean, we've seen what his house looked like when he's not being supervised by Jasmine.
Exactly. So now they get into the tent because it's sleeping time. But we did learn that Jasmine is ovulating and they would like to have children. So Jasmine begins some foreplay, and we learn that Jasmine has found out that she has a foot fetish. And it was one time Gino was wearing his Jesus sandals, and she just looked at them and got turned on. And the thing is, if it was just them talking about it, that's one thing. We can be adults and move on. But we get ample footage of Jasmine licking the bottom of this man's foot, Jasmine sucking the big toe, the middle toe. All the toes are getting some love. It was
You're just describing it. It's bringing back nightmare memories. Now, I can just hope that, you know, we're playing this up for the cameras, right? I like to see behind the scenes. I like to be like, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to wash Gino's feet very thoroughly. We're going to put a brand new sock on his foot. I'm going to take it off. And this is for the cameras, right? I'm going to suck his toes, because this man's walking around, and from what they're trying to tell us, this man's walking around in these socks all day. And she just whips the sock off and just taking the dirty foot, just going to town on it. I'm just like, oh my gosh. And then later on, she has the nerve, the gall, the next day to be like, not want to kiss him because he didn't, you know, brush his teeth. Like, what? You just had a stinky foot in your mouth. What does it matter? I don't even know where to go with this. This is so crazy. I think they did this mostly for the camera and the shock effect, but I just don't know with Jasmine anymore. I don't know.
So here is my first thing I want to say. First thing is, I'm not king shaming. If they're into toes, into feet, cool. That's fine by me. And I don't think you are either.
No. But look, just do it behind closed doors. I don't have a problem with you doing it. I just don't need to see it. Okay. Don't force it on me on one of my favorite TV shows.
So the second part for me is that we've seen these two for many seasons. And one of the benefits, one of the tiny, tiny benefits of seeing some of these couples multiple times on these shows is that we've seen them through basically every moment of their life. And you can start figuring out if they're faking it or if they're really into it. And after seeing how averse Gino has been to so many other sexual things, I think Gino likes his toes sucked. I think he's into it.
Oh, listen, I think Gino was a giant freak. I mean, we've talked about before on this show about, you know, Jasmine, maybe they get into this kind of like mother's child play.
Baby talk. Yeah.
Baby talk. We think Gino maybe likes some diaper play. I think you talked about in the past. So I think Gino is every bit into this, and I love how bashful Gino can get while doing this on camera, but he's definitely into this.
Yeah. I 100% also think he's very much into this, and he seemed to be happy. But then they have an unforgettable night, which means they did the thing, but I'm not going to just leave it there, because the way Jasmine spoke about this, he gave me his sperm. So they had the sex. Good for them. That's great. Although obviously she reminds us that she has had fertility issues in the past, and she has drawn a diagram on her calendar to show Gino and help him understand how they're going to go about having a baby. And she says, well, that was day one. So now the way it works is I'm ovulating. So this is a two fish day. This is a three fish day, meaning today we're going to have to do it twice. Tomorrow we're doing it three times. And basically, if I did the math correctly, Jason, 12 times in 6 days. That's the plan.
Gino's going to be just downing fistfuls of those blue pills just every day, I think, to keep up. But who is advising Jasmine on this fertility strategy? Because I don't think that's really how it works exactly.
Here's the thing. I haven't really looked into this before. So I'm going off of basically what I think logically makes sense, which could not make sense. But that being said, I don't think it works as, okay, so it's day two, therefore two times, day three, therefore three times, and then day four times. I don't think that's how it goes, but am I wrong?
Jasmine gets her fertility advice the same place Gino gets his K1 advice.
Yeah.
Something's getting lost in translation there.
I would say so. I definitely would say something is afoot here. And I'm not talking about his toe.
But a bumps.
Nailed it. But Gino, obviously, we know this about him. He doesn't like when things are forced or in a schedule, so to speak. So he immediately is like, let it be natural. I don't like a scheduled appointment with you. I don't like this. Which, I feel like I can understand what he's saying when it comes off like, all right, be quick. We have 15 minutes. It's an hour and ever. I feel like that's not going to help Gino's performances.
Listen, this as a fan of TV sitcoms. This is the kind of the natural sitcom trope, right? You plan out so much, it becomes a chore. But then when you just relax and let it happen naturally, that's when you get pregnant. That's the whole sitcom setup here. But it is interesting kind of reverse here, because I think Jasmine has been the one typically that's been like, I don't know if I want another kid. And Gino is like, I really want one. But now it's kind of like Gino's like, if it happens when it happens. And Jasmine is the one actually driving the planning here, which is a different kind of switch up from what their roles have been in the past.
Yeah, no, this definitely is. They're definitely in this space now where she clearly is like, well, we are trying to have a baby. So therefore, I don't understand any logic behind you not wanting to do this so we can have our baby. So that's a no-go. But then the second part of this to me is, well, if you make too much pressure on Gino, I don't think even the pills are going to help. Actually, they probably might.
Yeah, you need to give Gino the right environment, right? Gino does not like being pressured. Gino does not like being yelled at. He's not like, he has told us before, he has to be in the mood. He has to be in a certain space in order to be intimate with Jasmine. If she's mad at him, she's yelling at him, that's not going to get him where he needs to be. Even with the blue pills, it's not going to be where he needs to be. He needs to be in a safe environment. It needs to be natural. It needs to be, you know, a certain way. So he just doesn't want her pressuring him like this. And I guess I can see his point. But listen, he wants it done. So, I mean, I applaud Jasmine for actually taking the driver's seat and trying to make it happen.
Yeah, which ultimately, you know, I think being in a honeymoon, being away from home and all the home stuff and life duties that you got to do, be on vacation, essentially, I feel like nothing's going to be in his way and it'll happen when it happens.
But I mean, aren't they kind of on vacation every day? He don't got no job. He's like Tommy on Martin. He don't got no job. Like, so he's kind of on vacation every day. So I don't know what the pressure is he's facing at home, other than, you know, I don't really know. I don't think he has any pressure at home right now. So, he's got nothing else going on.
I agree. But then to me, looking at it through Gino's eyes, he's going to go home and worry about how they're in debt because of the wedding they had and the fact that they need to save money. But then also Jasmine wants her children here, but then they don't have that sorted yet. She doesn't like the house. They got to move. So it's a whole thing where I feel like there's things that are bigger in his head than they actually are. And I feel like ultimately he gets in his own head and it's going to prevent things. But we'll find out eventually if and or they are following this fertility schedule. Sorry, not fertility, ovulation schedule or not. Mm-hmm. So the other aspect of things is now that they're back from the vacation, Jasmine has number one thing on her mind is bringing her kids to the States. She's talked about this at length, that life will truly begin here when my children are here with me. We see her on a Zoom call with her mom and sister. And it was very nice in that it's always lovely to see Jasmine talk with her family or about her family. We did get some sad news that her mom could be sick, has some tests that need to be done that are going to cost about $800. She says she's going to ask Gino for the money. So I'm already mentally preparing for that awkward fight to happen. But then the other thing we hear here is she really wants to be around her family. She wants to visit her family as well. And so that takes us to the next scene we're about to talk about, which is the immigration lawyer.
Yeah, I do enjoy seeing the kind of more vulnerable side of Jasmine, the more, I think, sane and down to earth side. When she's talking to her family, she's not screaming. She's not being over the top. I think that's really where you see her at her most raw and vulnerable is in these moments. So I do enjoy seeing those moments. I do, you know, of course, hope the best for her family situation, for her mom, of course. I do wonder if we're going to get more into the $800 for the biopsy treatment for her mom, or if it's going to be something that just we assume that, you know, for this, Gino might be like, oh, yeah, sure, whatever. I would be interested to see if we actually get into that later.
Yeah, I mean, I already foresee that being a potential fight if they didn't talk about it before the lawyers, because the lawyer mentions how much it's going to cost them to file with the lawyer. And if she says that and the 800, he might end up being a bit of a dick about it. So we'll find out what happens there. But first, we have to talk about, of course, this appointment they had with the lawyer. So they're on their way to see an immigration lawyer because of the two things mentioned. Number one, she would like to travel to Panama and see her mom, see her sister, like visit her family and her children. Number two, bring in the kids here. And we learn that, well, we knew that Gino had done all the application himself. He had not taken the advice of a lawyer. He did it all on his own, and he felt like he did a damn good job, because here she is. Now, immediately, within minutes of sitting with this lawyer, which, by the way, is my MVP NPC of the week, is this lawyer, because he schools Gino like no other.
I mean, so, he's just throwing shade all over the place. He might as well be in a whole forest. There's so much shade going around here. Yeah. I love this guy. We need to get this guy his own show. We need to get him consulting on every 90-day couple we have. Just so, because I mean, I'm sure we have a lot of Ginos out there that are like, I did it all myself. I'm all good. Just so Anthony could come in. Anthony Ray, my boy Tony Ray, I'm going to call him. Tony Ray needs to come in and just school all these fools like, oh, you did this wrong? You did this wrong? Oh, you want to do this? No, that's not going to happen because this, and this. I just want him to come in and just school all of our couples about what they did wrong. And what
I would be so into that. Because
just the way he seamlessly threw shade and seamlessly threw Gino under the bus several times in the conversation, just effortlessly, was so great.
Yeah. So the big thing that he gets Gino on is the conversation comes up, but Gino says, you know, I applied everything for myself, and how are we going to go about this? And, you know, Anthony brings up, okay, so for traveling, when you apply for the adjustment of status, you get the advanced parole, and that will allow you to travel. So you're going to be looking at probably, 8 to 12 months for this to work out to happen. And then the conversation comes up about the children, and Anthony goes, so Gina, when you filed the K-1 visa, did you put the names of her children on the form? He's like, no, I thought we would get her first, see how everything goes, and then do it after. And then he says, well, that's going to make things difficult because that you can't file that. Gina's like, what if when we file for the adjustment of status, we have filed for them? And this is my favorite shady moment. He says, and he explains it like he's five. He's like, so adjustment of status means that you can adjust the status of someone who has status. She has status. The children don't have status. Therefore, they can't get an adjustment of status. She can. So that's going to be separate. That can't happen. And then Gino also gets told off what Anthony was like, oh, Google didn't get you that answer, did it?
Yeah. Look, Mr. Google didn't tell you that now, did it? you only get that advice from Mr. Tony Ray here. But I just love Tony Ray might as well just be like, well, dummy, you know, the kids don't have status now, do they? You didn't think about that, did you? I love Tony here. Get him his own show. I love he's like, you know, as this conversation goes, Gino just gets smaller and smaller in his chair. Because he's just shrinking. He's like, oh, crap. I done messed up. He knows he's going to get yelled at over this from Jasmine. And Tony is both like throwing Gino under the bus, and he's also pitching himself basically as their lawyer. He's like, I love the confessional he has. Well, I hope that Jasmine can convince Gino to partake of our services because Gino lets us know, listen, this is an informational meeting only, aka I'm not paying for this meeting. This is a free consultation. So Ray is just like, I hope you guys retain me for your services because I can definitely get this done for you a lot faster than if certain people did it by themselves, only Google. So good.
Yeah, I mean the dagger in the heart is when he basically says, yeah, had you put their names in the form, it would have taken 6 months. Now it's gonna take about 2 years.
The kids would probably already be here. Like it's like the kids would almost be here right now if you'd only done what you're supposed to do. But you know, Gino need to do it by himself. You can just tell Anthony is kind of like insulted that Gino has come in here, like, oh, I did everything myself. He's like, oh yeah. He's like, oh, I think he even says, oh, so you're kind of like an expert, huh?
Yeah, he's like, oh, you're semi-expert.
Yeah, semi-expert. Your little big shot there because you did all yourself. And let me tell you where you effed up here, Gino. You know, Anthony would probably reviewed all this already. He was like ready for them to come in. He was ready to just bat Gino down. This was such a great moment. I mean, but I do feel for Jasmine because as this is going on and Anthony is explaining everything, you just see Jasmine getting more and more upset. You can kind of tell this is real Jasmine, right? Because as you said earlier, we can kind of tell when Jasmine's kind of, you know, putting on, you know, she knows she's on camera. But this was real. She was getting really upset upon realizing this is going to take a lot longer than she thought it would to get her kids over.
Yeah, no, this is absolutely brutal because, I mean, especially if you're going in not really knowing what timeline to expect. So in your mind, you're like, oh, worst case, 8 months. This is the worst case scenario to hear is that, oh, it's take that, double that, and then maybe add some more months because it could be 24 months total. So that's brutal. The second thing, and Gino's going to get his lashings for this, I believe, when we see them next time, because Jasmine insisted they get a lawyer the first time. And he said, no, I can do it. I'm capable. Here's the thing. I will say this from experience, Jason. People are definitely capable of filing the K-1 visa solo. Liana did it without the help of a lawyer, and everything worked out to perfection. But Liana is a perfectionist. She read countless amounts of PDFs, guidances, forum boards with people that have already filed themselves, and all of that. And even then, like, you still aren't sure what's going to happen. It's always easier to just hand it over to someone who knows who this is their bread and butter. So now Gino is going to have to pay the fine, in my opinion, which is $5,000 to have the attorney file everything for them. And I think they'll be better off for it. I think it is a small price to pay to A, make up for the blunder that you did at the beginning, and B, give Jasmine the ease of mind that it's taken care of. Because believe me, if you do it and it takes a month longer than the expected time, you're gone. If you do it and it messes up and doesn't work, you're gone. Just pay the $5K and move on.
Yeah, half piece of mind, right? That you're not going to get yelled at by Jasmine. If at worst, a lawyer is going to get yelled at by Jasmine, yeah, not you, because you went ahead and handed it off.
You're already going to get yelled at for messing it up the first place. So,
yeah, and now he's going to pay even more because Anthony was telling us, like, hey, yeah, it's $5,000 for like 12 to 14 months, but you know, now we're going to take a little longer. So, you're probably getting about $10K. And you know, I think if Gino had done this, because I mean, you mentioned, you know, Leon doing it for you by herself, but you know, you're you, right? You're just you. probably a regular, you know, basic K-1. This is even more complicated because you have two dependents to talk about.
Right. Well,
K-1.
I had some complication because I'm Iranian and we filed during the Trump administration and the Muslim ban. So I had my own obstacles because all these other cases we were looking at, there weren't many of them where one of the people were Iranian and we couldn't follow their issues. So when I went for my interview the first time, everything went well. And literally the officer there said, at this point of the interview, we would have stamped approval, but you're Iranian. So now you're going to have to go through extra security checks and everything. Like when I tell you, Jason, they took every information I had. We're talking every profile I've made online. They wanted passports from like as far back as I could have them. And obviously, I don't be keep the old ones. I'm you know, so I had issues for sure. But again, we were able to overcome it. We did end up seeing a lawyer towards the end of the time because with the additional year we had to wait because of my nationality. We ended up seeing a lawyer because there was a petition being filed by people who were in similar cases, similar place to us. And this attorney was filing a suit so that as many cases that wanted to get in on it could, and we could like speed the process in a way. So we called a lawyer. We talked with the lawyer. We signed up for their thing. We sent everything. 3 days later, I got approved. And we had to message a little bit. Hey, listen, thank you for the advice. Can we get a refund though? and they paid it back. So shout out to them. They did pay us, give us back our money and everything. But it was getting to that place where we were like, okay, what we're doing isn't working. Let's see if an attorney can do something about it.
Shout out to them. I mean, let's give Liana her flowers too. I mean, I'm sure she's very meticulous with everything.
Oh yeah,
do it to a high degree. I'm sure Gino went on like WikiHow and just looked and just typed in like how to do K-1 visa and just took whatever came up first. So that's probably what he did. But yeah, let's give Liana her flowers for doing the job necessary and the right way. But I just don't think Gino was being that meticulous, but still want to take all the credit that you know we would give Liana as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is like at no point did Liana do all this stuff and then say, hey, bow down. I got this done because ultimately one of us had to do it. And she saw how much anxiety I get doing these things. So she took it over for her own anxiety because she hated that it wasn't getting done kind of thing. And I would want to do it, but I'm petrified sitting there looking at all these legal documents and getting nervous for no reason, might I add. That being said, Gino not only didn't want to pay money, he also wants all the praise for doing it. And now it's like, well, did you deserve it? Because the kids ain't here yet.
I loved how red he was getting throughout that whole thing, how much shrunken he was getting in his chair. He knows he's about to get it. And I'm very, you know, interested to see how this is going to go from here on out, because we see in the preview, he's like, well, I don't have $5,000. And I think we all know where this is going. Gino's going to relent. Gino always says he doesn't have the money and then somehow has the money. So I think at some point he's going to pay the money. It's just, but hey, listen, we know that Jasmine has access to other funds. I mean, listen, we might need to put in a call to Dane. Maybe we can get, maybe that's how Jasmine gets Gino. She goes, well, I can always call Dan. He can always lend me the money. If you don't have it, I need to get my kids.
She brings up
here.
His name. He'll pay everything.
Yeah, that's how you get it. That's how you get it. And you know, it's like y'all spend so much money on, Jasmine's body. You could have used some of that money to get your kids over here. I think the butt in total was $10K, right?
So, I mean, still blame Gino, because he's privy to how much money they're making or have. Mm-hmm. And he could have said that before they booked the venue of like, listen, if we book this venue, we can't do all this other stuff immediately. The fact that he didn't and now is going to probably play the card of, well, we don't have the money for that. So,
well, I mean, the wedding is on Gino. Jasmine was like, hey, I could take me, you and Coco at Justice of the Peace and I'd be fine. But Gino needed the whole wedding with his whole family. So the wedding part of it, that's on Gino. The, you know, the butt and all the other surgeries that Jasmine's had, that's on her. You could take probably a bunch of stuff out of Jasmine's body, sell it, maybe get a year or two on retainer of that attorney. So,
well, here's
a lot happened before this that they could have used to make sure they got the kids.
Well, whether or not they go with the attorney, they still have to file this because from what I understood is that Jasmine has not filed for adjustment of status yet, which is the next big thing you have to do once you get married in the 90 days. Because that allows you to get your permanent residency. It allows you to get your advance parole if you're trying to travel in the interim. And also, that's how you get your work permit as well to work in the United States. So with or without the kids, you have to file that. So now it's just the added complication. Because I think what the lawyer said was you can't use the adjustment of status for the children. They still have to file that and then file for the children. There's two different things they have to file. And I think what the lawyer was insinuating was this would all be done through them for that amount. It wasn't this is for this is for that. It was one sum. Yeah. So whether or not he chooses to put the $5,000 down, the expectation is that you're going to work on both of these things. And I ask you, Gino, are you going to work on both those things? And do you trust that you're going to get it done right?
I think he trusts he's going to get it done right. Would anybody else trust him? I don't think they should. Listen, they need to talk to Nick of Nick and Devin, because when we got to the tell-all last season, Nick was like, look, I already got my green card. I have to move to another state. I'm good. He started his stuff right away and was able to get his stuff done. I just don't know if Gino or Jasmine has that type of urgency that Nick had.
Yeah, no, I don't know about that. We'll see. We'll see with them. And then she did end the episode by saying, you know, if she wouldn't be here if she knew this would take this long, which I say, you know, first of all, Gino didn't tell you or didn't look, but if I were you, I would have looked myself, because I would not trust Gino to do it right.
So. For sure. I don't think anyone can look at Gino and be like, this guy has it together. I trust this guy with my life and my kids' lives. So a little bit of the ownership is on Jasmine as well.
Yeah, so we move on from what seemed to be paradise to, by the end of the episode, trouble in paradise. And next week, they're going to fight. So the honeymoon phase, very firmly over. We'll see how they play things out next week. For now, let's talk about a couple that were barely in this episode, and that's Ashley and Manuel. So last week, we saw Ashley talking to her family about how she doesn't like this half-life that Manuel is living with her. They've been married for a year, and Manuel has still not introduced his kids to her properly. She doesn't feel like he's let her in completely. And we didn't seem to make it that far away from last week before we're having this conversation in the car about it.
I'm pretty sure it was right after that, right when they got in the car after that, that wherever they were at. So that she wanted this addressed right now.
Immediately. She wanted it done. And with that comes obviously good things and bad things. The good news is Manuel says that the kids know about them being married and he wants to prep them for her being their second mother. And the bad news is he does also deliver this by essentially saying, you never asked, so I didn't have to say anything.
Boy, the delivery is tough with Manuel. I understand it's a different language, but my God, this man does not know how to deliver things in a good way. Basically saying, I'm going to breadcrumb my kids into this. Like I'm going to do a little bit at a time, but listen, it's been a year, sir. I mean, this should have been done probably. Well, it definitely should have been done before you got married. I'm going to say that. Should have also been done a long time ago. Y'all been together for a year now. My thing about Ashley and Manuel right now is I kind of feel like this is just their fight they have to have in the season. I honestly don't know if Ashley really even cares that much in real life. Cause I mean, it's been a year and we're just now talking about this in this way. Now that you have cameras in front of you and the whole time they were talking and arguing, it almost felt like they were kind of laughing through it a little bit. Did you get that a little bit?
It seemed like either this is a conversation they've had multiple times before, or the other side of it to me is that, like you said, this is basically them kind of doing this for the TV time. I don't know. What I do know for sure is that it's been a year, but it doesn't feel like much has changed.
Yeah.
So
it almost feels like we just picked right up where we left off and that no time has passed at all.
Yeah. And like what I would like to know is these things in the following order. I would like to know, has Manuel gotten his work permit and his advanced parole? Because these are parts of the story that I would like to see. Is he talking about going to visit his family? Are we going to hear him talk about work? We haven't really heard any of that yet through two episodes. And I feel like that will add some storyline here that I would like, as opposed to, again, doing the same thing we were doing for 6 months before this on the other season.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because I didn't even think about that. The fact that it has been a year. So some progress should have been made on those things you're talking about, but we haven't gotten any indication that that ball's moved at all.
No. So to give you a bit of a timeline help on using my own timeline, I got married in April and my permanent residency was given to me the next April. So April 2021. Mm-hmm. Before that, I got my work permit in November. So about 5 months after applying, after adjustment of status. And I got my advanced parole, I think, around the same time as well. So things will come together within the year. So that's my question is, what have they done? Because also what we've noticed with all these couples is that they wait to the last possible second to do things. Yeah. Because when you get the 90 days, you can immediately get married and file for adjustment of status. You don't have to wait for the 90 days to finish.
Yeah, and especially for Manuel, who, you know, on their last season, they were talking about the fact that, you know, Ashley has to pay for everything. And he's like, well, I can't work. I can't send any money back right now. So that would definitely be something I would be interested in knowing. Like, are you working now? Are you able to send back money on your own now? Or is Ashley still footing the bill? When we saw them on the tell-all, they were acting like it was still a thing going on. Because I believe the tell-all, it's so tough to manage all these timelines, because we're dealing with so many different times going on. I almost feel like Loki dealing with all the timelines, keep them all together, keep them all straight. Because I think for the tell-all is probably filmed after this, and they're still talking about the fact that they're sending, that Ashley's mom has had to send money back for him. But I don't know if that is them keeping in continuity with their previous season storyline, or they're talking in the real time. So you know what I'm saying? Like, there's just so much to manage with these storylines, especially with people coming back to back on these seasons. So like you said, I want to know where he's at in this process.
Yeah, especially again, I think, and you nailed this on the head, the whole work aspect being a big deal. You'd think that they would lead with this, but the fact that we're not getting this makes me feel like either it's not happened yet, or this is a greater conversation, a greater part of the season that we're going to see. I'm not sure. We'll see.
Yeah.
But that's about all we got from them this week. Let's take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to talk about Nicole and Mahmoud. Stay with us.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Okay, so we now go to Nicole and Mahmoud. We last saw Nicole at the airport about to scoop Mahmoud up from his trip to the States from Egypt. And they've not seen each other in about 6 months. He arrives. She locks him into a hug and says, "Kiss me, you mother effer." And he doesn't, as expected.
So, Nicole, I have so many problems with Nicole. And with just this episode, so much, so many issues. First of all, why does she look like the Wendy's girl with like an emo upgrade or something? Like, you know, the Wendy's logo, the girl in the Wendy's.
Come on, place. Jason, we shaming her hairline now.
We cut off her pigtails, gave her emo cut. That's just what she looked like to me. And from minute one, when she sees this man, she's obviously making him uncomfortable by doing all the things she's doing. Kiss me, you MFR, like in public. Like she knows he doesn't like this. And this is kind of the theme of the whole episode. It's like she thinks that his religion and culture is only in Egypt. And if you take him out of Egypt, his religion and culture falls away from him. That's not what it is. He doesn't like to show affection in public because that's not what they do where he's from. He doesn't like the fact you have your midriff showing, which you obviously came here knowing he'd have a problem with. It's wrong on so many levels from her in this moment and in the moments in the rest of the episode.
Yeah, I mean, I vocalized how I felt about her this entire season with regards to, or not this entire season, but last season with regard and like the opening of the season with regards to, well, we're going to be in States, which, you know, all bets are off. We can kiss. We can do all this stuff. I can dress this way and he's going to have to be okay with it because that's how we do it stateside. And my whole thing was, you're acting like he was being conservative because he was in Egypt when I think he's being conservative because he's conservative.
Yeah, like, that's his way of life. That's how he lives his life. Take him out of his home is not going to change that.
Like, I do think he's going to get, like, there's going to be certain aspects of this that he's going to get used to and be okay with. But I think it is outrageous to just assume that he's going to get here and he's going to switch up completely because
especially when he steps off the plane, right? Like he's literally just one step off the plane and she's acting like he's just totally, you know, done with his way of life.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the other thing is that he took a long flight to get here from Egypt from Cairo to Los Angeles. It's about 17 hours and 5 minutes. Total. Yeah. That's a one-stop flight. So depending on how many stops he had, it could be longer. And I'm sorry, I'm very okay to just not. And she got mad at him for not sleeping on the plane. Not everyone can sleep on the plane.
Yeah, she got literally, she was like, "I am irritated that you didn't sleep on the plane." Like, it's not that easy to sleep on the plane. Maybe she can do it because she's like a robot person and can like just kind of power down. But he's not that way. So, you know, I don't blame him for being tired and being not his best self in this moment because he just got off of, like you said, 17-hour journey. She should know, as she mentioned, she knows kind of what it's like because she's had this same journey. But I don't really blame her for not wanting to be so talkative, not wanting to be so all up in her face because I just don't think he's that way normally in the first place. But especially coming off a 17-hour journey.
Yeah, I feel like especially when you add in the layer of what the nature of this travel was, like he's flying to America to move there permanently. You're stressed because you have to talk to an officer upon entry. You got to make like there's still some steps to go through from the airport upon when you see your person. So I would be having a tough time going to sleep. It's not like we're on vacation travel. This is a permanent travel. So it's definitely a lot. But again, my biggest thing is he is not going to want a PDA regardless. Right. She did say, yeah, well, Mahmoud's in America now and I can do whatever I want to him. And I thought, well, that's not a great way to advertise America.
Yeah, I mean, well, he's not a toy. Like, he can just do whatever he wants. I mean, he has his own thoughts and his own opinions on things. I do also wonder if part of this is like, you know, like, well, I had to do it what he told me to do when I got over there. So now he has to do what I told him to do when he gets over here. So it's like, do you really love this man, or do you just want to give him a little bit of what you felt like he gave you when you came over to Egypt? When the two situations are totally different, you know, it's his culture, his way of life over there is what he was trying to get you to see. But here is just kind of like, you just want to be all wild and free, but he's still in that culture and religion. Like, he didn't change because his location changed.
Right. Like, I think the biggest thing to say is, like, everyone remembers the bathing suit she had to wear when she was there with him. My question then becomes, does she expect him to now be like, all right, well, we're in the States, so bikini season it is? Because I don't necessarily know if, like I said, I don't think he's going to be like bikini season's here.
He still wants her to wear the bikini if they go to a pool. Like, that's not going to change.
Even like at the airport, he's like, well, your stomach's kind of exposed, and she's like, don't do this now. And he was like, well, don't say don't do this, because now it's like, I did a thing, I didn't do a thing. And I was like, oh God, I remember exactly why I was dreading seeing these two here. Mm. So already it's going to be tough. This is about all we saw from them this episode, though. We do see on the next time on that they're going to be in an argument. So
we did get her tour of her house that she gave him, and where he was kind of freaking out about every single thing that was there.
Well, it's like she had done some paintings, and there was, I think, a nude woman on a painting. There, she had a mannequin because she has a sewing machine. She like makes some clothes and stuff, but the mannequin was completely nude. And he was like, why is this here? Like, and then she had a confession where she was here before he was here, so she gets to stay. And I was like, I don't know if he has an issue with that so much as why is the mannequin naked is probably his question. But also,
we just don't like naked stuff. He's like, why is everything naked with you? Why you got to show everything skin? Even the mannequin got to show his skin. What's wrong with you? And then he gets the celebratory meal. Welcome to America. Here's a frozen pizza.
Yeah, she was like, should I get the pizza going? And I was like, are you going to order? What toppings? You know, Jason doesn't like many toppings or whatever.
Hey, I think it was like a cheese pizza. So, you know, I throw some pepperonis on that bad boy, but, you know, each their own.
It was a bog standard tombstone pizza that she threw in the oven, which comes about, four slices on default. And I swear when she was cleaning up, there were three slices still left.
Yeah, he barely ate it. He's just like, welcome to America. Here's your frozen pizza and some secondhand boxers I got you off from a thrift store.
Yeah, she keeps calling them pajamas. They're boxers, right?
Yeah, I think so. At the very least, they're like, they almost look like swim trunks. I don't know. It was so weird because, and you know, he tells us, you know, he sleeps in his clothes. So she got him this, and she emphasized, okay, now you go shower and you go put this on. I also didn't like the fact that she was kind of leading him around like his mommy when he got there, like outside the airport, like, now this is a crosswalk.
This is where careful. We cross the road.
Yeah, you can't just go running out in the traffic now. This isn't Cairo. Like, the way that she just kind of led him by the hand was like, here's your pajamas, go take a shower, get ready for bed. It's like, oh my gosh, this is just good. This is already just leading to disaster. And how snippy she got with him. She's like, well, actually, you know what? I'm really irritated. You didn't sleep on the plane. Like, oh my God, you're starting the first freaking day. Like, can you just please give it a rest?
Yeah, I mean, truly, look at where we are now. And where are they going to go from here? It can't get...
No, we're good.
Only get better, right?
Hopefully, no, we're maybe. Good. Listen, if you're on the registries, you know where this went. If you're in the real life, you know where this went. It ain't nowhere good. If you don't know what I'm talking about, if you want to look it up, go ahead and look it up. We're not going to say it on here because we're spoiler free on this podcast. But if you want to know, go look it up. It ain't good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Happily ever after question mark, that question gets answered.
That question gets answered. And I, you know, I didn't know until Jason told me. So if you're looking for that stuff, AKA spoilers or results of where they are now, you can look that up, but we don't talk about it on the pod so that the rest of you can enjoy the ride as much as follow without knowing until we get to the later parts of the season.
Yeah. So I think if you've watched them their past show, you didn't think this was going to end well, did you?
No, you were never thinking that these two were going to last. Like, I think a lot of us, I speak for a lot of them, I say we were shocked that they were back on this season.
I thought they would be done for sure, but hey, I think part of it is they want that 90-day money.
Exactly. All right. So then let's move on over to the next couple here. And that, of course, is going to be Rob and Sophie, who, once again, we didn't really get a lot from them here, which doesn't come as a shock because what are we doing here? Why are they here? We follow them where they last left off, which was at the selfie gallery. So she walked out of the selfie gallery. Rob is sad because he believes that even if they have problems, she should be at home solving it with him. And she didn't come home with him. And she, meanwhile, is on an Uber going back to her friend's place. And she says she doesn't want to move in because he's pressuring her to move in. She wants to move back in because she wants to move back in. So nothing really going on there. We do hear Rob shadily talk about how she lost her wedding band as well.
What got me is when he's on the way back home, he's like, you know, I just believe in the sanctity of marriage. I'm like, sir, do you not remember why we're in the position we are in? It's literally because you were cheating. He did not believe in the sanctity of marriage. He was cheating. But now, because you want her back, you now, oh, I believe in the sanctity of marriage. You work it out. My dude, get a life. Get a clue. I can't stand Rob sometimes. I really can't.
No, absolutely not.
Sir, the sanctity of marriage. Stop it. Stop it.
Yeah, I am over him, but we have to continue. But now we can talk about Sophie and her mom, because she goes to meet up with her mom, who's obviously in town because she's seeing a man. And mom said, let's meet up at a bookstore. And Sophie tells us mom doesn't read. So I don't know why she asked for a bookstore.
That is shade on a level. Like, you so dumb, mom. You don't even read. Why meet at a bookstore? Like, oh, wow. You just really just put your mom out there like that on national television.
Well, the funniest part of it to me as well is that they get here to the bookstore and she again to her face says, you don't read books. What are you doing here?
Do you even know how to read, mom? Like, for real.
Yeah. So mom brings her here and says, you know, he said the L word to me last night. So we're moved. My relationship's great. Anyway, how's your shitty relationship? Oh, you're still trying to be with him? You yuck. Get out of here.
This was so interesting because it kind of, you know, and Sophie will talk about this a little bit in this episode about, you know, the struggles her mom has had. And her mom reads to me as kind of like a person that's really never grown up. I mean, because as she's talking about her relationship, she's like, he told me he loved me last night and it got me out. I'm like, how old are you? Just like, this is like the expressions of like a 14 or 15 year old, right? Like, it just, she feels a little
dating makes you feel young, you know?
Well, listen, I haven't dated in a long time, so maybe I've just lost touch with that side of it. But it just read to me as like, wow, it's really kind of like a 14 or 15 year old feeling she's giving me right here. Like, as if this isn't like a mother and daughter. It's almost like a sister relationship with these two.
Yeah, which I think we've kind of been told that they're very close like that. And I think that it's very clear based on the way she's sharing with Sophie that it's not a one-way street with Sophie and her mom. Her mom also talks about her relationships and probably takes advice from Sophie as well. It's like a give and take.
Yeah, but Sophie's had to feel like a little, like kind of the roles are reversed, where Sophie's kind of parenting her mom in some ways.
Right, which is then funny to me because then you've got her mom actively saying, no, dump this man. Don't be with him. He's awful. Why are you? He's the knob. We call him the knob. You should never be with a man like this.
Yeah, he's like, we call him a knob for a reason. He's Rob the knob. And so, yeah, it's Sophie's mom is just like, yeah, just chuck this whole relationship. It's not working. You know, let it go. So he's like, well, we got to work it out. I'm almost kind of like on a mom's side here. I'm like, you probably just kind of cut your loss.
Right. So now where we're left with them is kind of nowhere. We didn't move the needle at all. And this is about all we've gotten.
I will say I loved what's gen fiction? It's
like, okay. Yeah. Like, what's gen fiction? I feel like I want to read that. And that's when she was like, well, do you even read, mom? She's like, no.
Like, gen fiction is like a SoundCloud rapper or something. Like, what is that? Gen fiction.
Definitely have listened to Gen Fiction's mixtape. It's really good.
I do kind of get a kick out of Sophie's mom, though, when she's on screen. It's just it's a weird relationship, I think.
It's funny. I like them together. I hate when she's there with Rob because it's so tense and awkward and uncomfortable.
Definitely gets toxic when they're around each other.
Yeah. Also, they're going to fight next episode, Sophie and Rob. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah, of course. Would you expect anything else?
No, but I do think we need to brace ourselves, Jason, because we're about to talk about a couple that we haven't talked about yet this season. For the first time, it's time for Big Ed and Liz. Now, Big Ed and Liz have moved to Arkansas, to Big Ed's old stomping grounds. And we learned that Liz has gotten rid of, she sold away her partnership at the restaurant that she had been offered last time we saw them. So she dropped everything to move there with him to Arkansas. And they've got her daughter Riley there with them for the summer. And honestly, yeah, man, yeah, go ahead.
No, I you know, it, normally I'd be like, oh, that's great. You know, the kid's spending time with her mom. That's so fantastic. It was like, also another side of me is like, this kid's going to have like a front row seat to the dysfunction. Cause you know, they're not gonna be able to keep this in for long. They're going to start fighting in front of the kid at a certain point.
Yeah. I mean, the 90-day way, aside from like maybe two or three couples in the entire franchise, is, oh yeah, this looks good, huh? They look happy. That ain't going to last.
Enjoy while it lasts. About a week, it's going to be all going to hell.
You're sitting there, you know, leaning into the TV. You're like, oh, this is great. They're so happy. Little do you know, by next week, you're going to be watching through like a little hole in your blanket because you don't want to like see, you're too uncomfortable. Because things will get bad. And like you said, with Riley, this first episode with them, lovely. Everything sounds great. Everything's looking good. Riley is awesome. I actually really like her. I'm already sad for when she has to see the nastiness that this couple is going to go through, most likely.
She looks so much like Liz. I was like, oh my God, that's like a little mini me of Liz. Mm-hmm. It was weird. I mean, it is her kid. So, I mean, that makes sense. But
right.
the resemblance was uncanny. It's like it was her kid or something.
Well, last time we had seen them, they had their engagement party. There was some drama there, but they hadn't set a wedding date. They have finally set that wedding date. They're getting married in 2 months. So I feel like for the duration of this season, we're going to be following their journey to getting married. And the other thing we learn is that they're living off their savings right now, and they have decided they would like to get into the business of selling houses. So they're working on a practice pitch. And who are they practicing on, you may ask? Riley, the child.
This was cute. This is a nice little cute segment. I enjoyed it. But then you get to the reality of like, yeah, this is yet another grown man and grown woman that have no plan beyond, we're just gonna, you know, live off our savings. It's fine. We'll be all right. Let's just buy this big ass house and we're just kind of wing it, right? Like they join the ranks of, you know, Gino and Jazz, where they're just like, we'll live off our savings for a while, and then we'll just wing it. We'll just figure it out. It's just like, wow, y'all have just no head for planning, have no head for like what y'all going to do with this big ass mortgage you just obtained if you don't have any real income.
I mean, they kept throwing in these like really, really ridiculous jargon, just like legal jargon almost. Like, yeah, you know, we're going to get billboards, signage, marketing, networking,
contracts, you know, this and that. Like, y'all haven't even applied for your real estate licenses yet. You're like, you're months away from actually being able to sell a house.
It's going to be a minute before you got something going on there for sure. Also, they're nervous about working together because Liz says, well, I want us to be equals, and that is important. But as they flash back to when she was there, when Big Ed was doing a photo shoot and that wasn't going well. I was like, okay, yeah, we'll see how this plays out for the two of you. But what's funny to me is that, yeah, episode one with them, great. If someone brand new was covering 90 Day, they'd be like, oh, they seem fun. Little do they know.
We're veterans. We know. No. Don't get excited. It's the end's gonna come soon. Don't you worry. It's almost like that grizzled when you walk into a workplace, that grizzled vet that's been there for years. Like, oh, it's all nice. It's all nice and fun now. It's all nice and rosy now. But just wait until they're throwing their rings at each other like they like to do. They can take the rings off and toss in the other one's face. This is what they like to do. You just wait. You just wait here, young whippersnapper. You're going to see pretty soon what Big Ed is all about.
Yeah, it's, you know, you thought this was comfortable. Brace yourself because impact is coming. And with these two on the next time on, we do see them, shocker, arguing. So
the veneer is starting to slip. The mask is slipping in front of the kid. It's like, mommy's being a little cranky, you know, isn't she?
Yeah, my notes for the next time on are, fight, argument, fight, spiritual bath, traditional marriage. So mostly fights next week.
Yes, of course.
The traditional marriage, though, will be going to our final couple here, and that's Emily and Kobe, who have, after a long, long travel, finally arrived. And they're very excited to see Kobe's family. We do meet Kobe's best friend, Valerie, who comes to pick him up at the airport. And what was your thought on the entire process with them?
I think it's, first of all, this is just a little like about Emily and Kobe themselves. I think it's interesting that they are going to be it's looking like they're going to be our golden couple this season, where we look at them like, this is our one hope for true love. When we first saw Emily and Kobe, it was like, oh my gosh, she is awful. She is a nightmare. The family is a little like iffy. So it's a wonder what a good edit will do you, because we're not really getting a lot of that Emily we got, in the previous season, in these one or two episodes anyway. I just feel like we're going to get pretty much mostly positive for them the whole season. But coming into Cameroon here was very nice. They touched down, they meet up with Valerie. I think probably Emily and Valerie had probably already met a little bit. I love how comfortable Valerie's already getting with the family. He's holding the kids and everything. Mm-hmm. Like, man, that's quick. That's nice. But then we get into the whole skirmish with the people outside, the whole kind of like mob, whatever you want to call them, of them like confronting Kobe and the family outside.
Yeah, which we didn't quite get an answer of exactly what was happening. But the way Kobe described it was, these were people that hang around the airport because they know that, rich people are coming through and they can get some money. And he says, basically, I showed them how much I can only give them, that was good enough, and they left us alone. And I was like, okay, well, that seems fine then. It did scare, I think, Emily's parents quite a bit.
Oh, definitely.
They were unsure what was going on, and it was just like people yelling in a language they do not understand.
I mean, I would have been scared too. I mean, I was looking at that like, what the hell's going on here? But I think Kobe did explain it like rightly. He in this environment, like you see white people. Like we heard from Valerie a little later what they think of white people from TV and stuff. Mm-hmm. So when you see white people in this country, you're like, oh my, they got money for sure. So let's go get them up with money. Let's go see what they can give us. I don't know if it was, I don't know what the conversation was like between Kobe and them. We didn't really get a good indication of that. But I think Kobe was like, hey, let me just give you a little something so you can go away, so we don't have any trouble, so there's no issues. And I think Kobe handled it the exact right way. I was very interested to see all the porters. Like each one of them having like, there's like 20 of them each carrying one thing of luggage. That was interesting to see. They look like an NBA warm-up team with their like jackets on, warmed up on the court as they're like taking the luggage out. That was very interesting and fascinating to me. It's always fun to see these different cultures and what they do in the different places. And I'm glad we're going to get this kind of viewpoint in this season, where Happily Ever After is typically stateside. We don't get a lot of travel on this version of 90 Day. So I'm glad to see this culture is coming in here.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100% there. And, the whole thing with making judgments on people without knowing them, I feel like this is a big one where they're like, oh yeah, well-off people, of course, so let's like get some money out. I remember my first year of university, when I would tell people that I came from Dubai, the immediate thought was, oh, you're loaded. And I was like, believe me, if I was, I would not be living on campus. Like, let's be 100% clear here. I would be getting a very cush villa or sure. House to live
at. I wouldn't be here with y'all, is basically what you're saying.
Like, right. It's like, do you see me slumming it? Do you see what I'm eating and what bargains I'm hunting? Stop this, please. You're embarrassing yourself.
I won't be having top ramen for dinner. Okay. Let me just tell you that.
Exactly. So now we do get to see. So they go to the hotel, they spend the night. The next morning, they're going shopping before meeting his family. And Kobe has planned out to take them to a clothing store where they can shop for some outfits that fit the culture. And he says that this would symbolize that they're respecting the culture if they arrive in these traditional outfits. Whereas Emily says she likes the outfit. She likes the color. She likes all the patterns. But she feels like it's a little disingenuous because she doesn't know about the culture if she's wearing the stuff. The only thing I will say here is I appreciate that she confesses that she feels disingenuous. The additional thing I would say is, you could have Googled it.
Yeah, Google's your friend. don't use Google to fill out your K-1 forms, but use Google to look up your husband's culture, get a little information going, and maybe ask him some other questions about the culture.
Yeah, I mean, it's been 3 years. Y'all been together for three years now.
You got an expert right next to you, so I think you got a fount of information. But I did like that, you know, Emily called it out, mom called it out. Like, we want to make sure that we're being respectful, that we're not doing anything wrong. I thought everything was going peachy keen until they're dressing dad up, and then dad goes, Wakanda. I'm like, oh. We were doing so good.
We were almost there.
But you had to say freaking Wakanda. Like, but for the most part, I thought Emily and her family were doing well to make sure they were staying in bounds and everything. And they seemed to really be open to embracing the culture and you know, taking their lead from Kobe.
Yeah. No, I feel like this is, ironically enough, the couple that we're supposed to be rooting for this season.
Yeah.
Because outside of a little moment here and there, it's very clear that they've been together for 3 years and they've gotten used to each other, in that some of the comments Emily's making, for example, in confessional, are not bugging Kobe the way they would have when we first saw them. So I think 100%. They've worked on a lot of things. They've improved, which is great. I do feel like we're going to have some turbulence coming because, like I said in the beginning, Kobe's family wants them to have a traditional marriage there. And while Emily seems like she might have an issue with that, it's just it's a wedding. I think they're going to be
fine. Yeah, I don't think she's going to have an issue. I think she'll be like, that's great. That's cool. Let's do it. Because I do think this is going to be like the big positive couple of the season, which like I said earlier, is wild because they're one of Emily's one of the most hated characters on her season of 90 Day.
Yeah.
So that'll be, it's interesting to see that juxtaposition now. And I would also say that it's just, they feel very well worn together. They feel like a couple that, like you said, has been together. The family loves Kobe. There seems to be no beef. Now, compare this to Andre and Libby, right? Because I think on one of their happily ever after seasons, we went back to Andre's hometown. It's kind of similar to this, where Libby's family was around. They're like, oh, there's no McDonald's around here. Like, this is crazy. Look at how poor everything is around here.
Yeah. And like, even them, they had good moments. It was just goddamn Charlie that was the big issue.
Charlie. Chuck was also being a dick at that point.
It took a while for him to improve.
Yeah, this is before we all loved Chuck, Libby's dad. Chuck, Charlie, I think one of her sisters were all kind of being awful around that point when they went to Moldova with Andre. So it's nothing like that. I mean, I think we look at those two situations and we compare them. Emily's family is you know, high and above Libby's family in terms of dealing with the culture and being in this new place and being respectful of the place they're in.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, I don't see rough roads ahead for these two specifically, but I think, you know, we're going to have a speed bump here or there, but otherwise I think we're going to be fine and we're going to be happy ultimately that they're on the season.
Yeah, I think they're going to fake us out with some like, oh no, something bad's about to happen. I'm like, just kidding, psych, everything's fine. I think we're definitely going to get a few of those throughout the season for them.
Yeah, we discussed this a little bit before we went live here, and I guess let's talk about it a little bit on pod before we end things. No sign of Angela and Michael, which I'm happy. Make no mistake, I'm happy they're not here, but I'm also curious what's happening, because you would think that they would be heavily featured on the season, and it's just unbelievable, especially based on the fact we didn't even see them on the next time on this episode, that we're not going to see them until episode 4 at the earliest is very shocking to me.
And we do also have two other couples that are MIA as well, but
remind us who they are, because
so we're still waiting on Patrick and Thais. We're still waiting on them. We're still waiting on Lauren and Alexi, who I think are like from way back, because I don't think I've ever seen them.
There are like old school couple from like the OG season.
Because they're before my time. So they'll be new to me when they pop up. But Angela and Michael have been having some real life drama out here in these streets. So I'm very curious to see if maybe there have been a late cut for this season, because like I said, they've been having some drama. And you would think, with Angela being one of their like kind of front and center cash cow toxic people, that they would have gotten her in here episode 1.
Right.
So I'm just wondering if there's going to be a little something going on with Angela and Michael there. But we shall see.
Yeah, we're not going to hold our breaths. We'll see what happens with them. But ultimately, I just don't foresee this going any specific type of way. Yeah. The hope is that, you know, they're off our screens, but we'll see.
Yeah, we can cross our fingers and hope.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll find out. All right. Well, Jason, this was a very fun recap. I'm glad you were able to join me. Let the people know, where can they find you and what are the projects you have going on right now?
Yeah, happy to be here as always, Puya. You can find me here on the Raw Pass Podcast Network talking about the show Married at First Sight with my co-host Asia Welch. We are on the podcast A Perfect Match, talking about that show. Check them out just about every week. The season 17 is coming to an end pretty soon, mercifully. So check us out there. As we just finished up Love is Blind coverage, so if you're catching up on Love is Blind, you want to see some great recaps, me and Mary Kwiatkowski did that over here on the Raw Pass Podcast for Habitus Network, so check that out as well. Other than that, that's where you can find me.
Perfect. Thank you, Jason. Of course, y'all can find me on Twitter at Puyaism. And you find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Puya. That's where I am when I'm not podcasting. So come through, say hi. Always appreciate it. Liana and I are still talking Masked Singer, this new scene. We just drafted all the costumes remaining. So you can check that out on the Masked Singer wrap up. And aside from that, I've been making pop-ups, talking BB Can here and there. So if you're still keeping up with the show or just listening to those podcasts, you can find me over there as well. Aside from that, we have arrived at our destination here on the Hot Mess Express. We hope you had a fun time with us. I'll catch y'all next week with episode 3. But until then, take care. Have a good one. Bye.
How many days are you gonna wait before you're tired?